We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Welcome back to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am still Matt Harvey, or at least I assume that I still am. Things have gotten pretty timeless in lockdown, but I will take me at my word. It is week infinity of forever of lockdown, and I am here once more to bring you the news. So let's get into it. I will once again be the bearer of weird news. Let's start with some science fact news. Star Wars has inspired scientists to build artificial skin that can feel. The electronic skin, known as asynchronous coded electronic skin, is made up of a network of sensors connected via a single electrical conductor. It can be used in robots or prosthetic limbs to recreate a sense of touch that feels temperature, shape, texture, and pain, according to the team of scientists at the National University of Singapore, who spent a year and a half developing it. Pain. I lose a limb and you bring back pain? Nobody wants that. Nobody wants pain. Are you also bringing back the ability to contract leprosy? There's a level of uncanny valley that we would all be okay with. And pain, too close to realism. Just, like, can you bring back touch? And you can bring back sensations that are similar to that, but pain? Get rid of it. We're done with it. We lost the arm. We've already made a sacrifice. Now, the scientists said that Star Wars inspired them, but I would say that there are other things that we need from the Star Wars films more than artificial arms feeling pain. Maybe some spacefaring ships, some faster-than-light travel, the ability to live on a variety of other planets, and failing all that, the number one invention that we should be inspired by Star Wars to build, the moisture farm, moisture-catching devices that we see on Tatooine, as apparently we are slowly terraforming the Earth into a desert-like planet, much like Tatooine. Look, maybe I should just get one of those military-grade homes the Jawas travel in. Seems like a nice solution to both the housing crisis and climate change in one hit. Look, maybe robot arms that can feel were a good idea in the 70s, when there was no such thing as climate change, and we were unlikely to die in either a heated death or drown in the cold, watery sadness. Both are things that we would be best served by having an unfeeling robot body and a cold, unfeeling robot heart, so we don't feel sadness as we watch species after species die around us and friend after friend die before we manage to make it to New Zealand, find the world's richest in their escape bunkers, and destroy them for not spending their money on fighting the ever-changing climate disasters instead of building luxury escape bunkers. But as these bunkers are off the grid, and you are a robot, the upgraded solar panels that they have researched have proven very useful in preserving your unfeeling robot body. And as the last species on Earth, the billionaire class, will be rendered extinct with your cool Luke Skywalker fist. Moving over to Micronation News. 50 years since declaring its sovereignty from the rest of the country, one of Australia's most well-known micronations is to be dissolved. The Principality of Hutt River will once again become part of the Commonwealth of Australia, according to Royal Hutt River Legion Major Richard Andana Barton. Of the roughly 100 self-declared independent entities around the world, about a third of these can be found in Australia. I suppose they found a semantic loophole to the old racist adage, if you don't like it, leave. They technically aren't in Australia anymore. Checkmate, racists! Though, as far as I know, it is always white people trying to start their own countries, presumably as a throwback to their colonial roots. After all, renaming places as other places is what white people have done best since the dawn of time. While a lot of countries have sought independence through civil war, Leonard Casley set up the legally unrecognised independent state of 75 square kilometre property in Western Australia's Midwest region following a disagreement over wheat production quotas in 1970. A real testament to the Australian tradition of throwing off the shackles of government oppression, or it would be if it didn't mean that they were trying to leave the nation. While it has never been recognised by the state or Commonwealth governments, the Principality of Hutt River received a letter from Queen Elizabeth II in 2016 on its 46th anniversary. Just like my grandfather when he turned 100, which coincidentally made him the independent nation of Frank. It is acknowledged on Google Maps as a tourist attraction and has its own postage stamps and currency. About 10,000 non-resident citizens and visitors got a stamp on their passports as proof of their travels. But they beat mainland Australia to having a treaty with the Indigenous landowners. So there's that going for them. Though, like all things this micronation did, I suspect it was just an attempt to get recognition from one entity to build their case as a sovereign nation. Which puts it on par with Australia's attempt to recognise and incorporate the Indigenous culture. So, one all. On December 2nd, 1977, the Principality declared war on Australia, until Prince Leonard notified authorities of the cessation of hostilities several days later. Although the declaration was officially filed, it was definitely a war Australians didn't know that they were a part of, effectively making it a non-war war like Iraq. And the Principality is lucky there's no oil there, or else they may still have peacekeeping troops within the region, not at war, nor committing war crimes in the region to this day. Prince Leonard's fight for independence, regardless of its legality, became a symbol of inspiration for all those who championed for less government intervention and the doing away with bureaucracy in a country built on the concept of a fair go. Or, as it has come to be known recently, the go principle.
The go, you should get a go.
Seems like a bad time to rejoin Australia, if I'm honest. What? With escalating coronavirus cases, mass unemployment, and an ever-increasing power grab from reject store Lex Luthor, Peter Dutton. As Dutton has said, the Australian Services Directorate powers will be increased to be able to spy on Australian citizens, the everything that you claim not to be when you're in the Principality. The very thing that caused us to feel sympathy with News Corp journalist Annika Smethurst after the AFP raided her home on June 2019, over a news report suggesting the Home Affairs Department was seeking power for the Signals Directorate to spy on Australians. How dare you put us in a position to feel bad for a News Corp journalist, even if they were reporting the truth for once? At the time, Dutton had claimed the story was nonsense despite publicly confirming its substance, and then raided a journalist's home because they dared to talk about it in a not-at-all-precedent-setting show of behaviour shift. But this quick look at the Signals Directorate website shows their motto is reveal their secrets, protect our own. Which they seem to think is a statement of trust, not paranoia. It does sound inclusive, but they have lowered the threshold of who there is from outside of Australia to outside the Signals Directorate office. But Dutton has confirmed Australia could now spy on its own citizens. After all, they need to know who's planning on having sex with patients in quarantine. It is of the utmost importance. Seems like the right time to have stayed as a micronation if you're asking me. But what do I know? I've never seceded before. Now let's check in with the Australian Deadly Animal News. Australia. A country known for its deadly tiny animals, burning hot sun, casual racism, and possibly not existing, depending on who you ask, may have just invented an app that is being described as Shazam for spiders. Because even though we are determined to destroy all our local wildlife at record rates, we need to know which species are still alive for us to destroy. We will win this never-ending battle with nature. Contain it in a man-made box and scream, "Take that, nature, you think you're irrepressible, huh? Now you live inside a box that we made, a terrarium." The app is called Critipedia. It's a collaboration between Nick and Murray Scare, who, along with Usain Bolt, are the living embodiment of nominative determinism, and who worked with Australia's National Science Agency and the Liberal government's favourite punching bag, the CSIRO. It's a machine learning engine designed to automatically identify different species of spiders and snakes, which relies on you to take a moment of clear thinking after being bitten by a potentially deadly spider or snake to not panic, but rather line up and attempt to get a selfie with the creature that is trying to kill you, or what is otherwise known as the Instagram effect. It is definitely a reasonable way to spend the possibly 1 to 2 hours you might have left of your life. After all, think of all the likes you'll get. Hopefully you're in one of Australia's famous Wi-Fi bushland trails and can take advantage of our world-class NBN network, which has been put in place by a government that definitely cares about you and getting you what you need. An AI-powered algorithm like Critopedia requires hundreds of thousands of images to become accurate in its assessments. So CSIRO and Data61 are hoping to get as many people as possible to download Critopedia and upload pictures of spiders and snakes that they might see in the wild. And given the rampant success of the COVID-safe app, I feel like we're in with a good chance of getting everyone to download this app. Although it's not a simple task, given the staggering high percentage of people who believe in flat earths, literal angels, 5G conspiracy theories, and the Murdoch press. We may need a way to make it about the people, not the science, because people do not like science at the moment. The CSIRO should approach Nintendo and try to get them on board with gamifying the process. Creative avatars, accessories, points that mean nothing but feel good to collect. We need to turn Critopedia into like a mishmash of Pokemon Go and Instagram, encouraging Australians to go bush and search out the kind of animals that we need to get in the database, if we're going to save lives, by getting users to post as many blurry / artistically filtered photos as they can so that the algorithm can learn and slowly make adjustments to its personal taste and then automatically downvote the terrible photos so that you, as a user, will never have to learn to tell your friends that their photos are no good and you can just outsource that to the robots. To the finance desk, it's desperate capitalism news. As the coronavirus continues to peek its cheeky head out of the hole like an animatronic mole in a game of whack-a-mole, and we, the people of Earth, continue to be the frustrated child always hitting where the mole was and never where the mole is, different industries are trying to make you feel better about using their services again. With Japanese theme parks asking people not to scream, bars and pubs hoping the promise of alcohol and maybe a little bit of sex will be enough to get you to risk your life, we see another company present as someone who cares about you, the money sacks. Apologies, that should have been read suckers. Oh, damn it. The customers. This happens every time. Emirates. Emirates Airlines has made a surprising offer. They are promising travelers a free funeral if you are infected with COVID-19 during a flight. The airline industry has been ravaged by worldwide border closures, stopping people from holidaying. They are getting desperate to convince people that the giant tube in the sky recirculating air breathed out by people who just spent hours crammed in with more people than there would be queuing up for rides at Disneyland and eating only the fastest foods that in all likelihood cause them to fart, if not directly in your nose, then close enough that social convention dictates that you must stay quiet about it, but maybe try pointing the knob that blows the air directly into your face, so even if you don't get rid of the fart, at least you'll get an infection, and maybe die, and then you won't have to smell the fart again, thereby winning the war on biological weapons in a kamikaze attack. Well, they've tried all sorts of things, from leaving middle seats empty, to requiring everyone to wear masks, to health checks at terminals, in order to instill confidence in passengers who may be understandably cautious about air travel amid a global pandemic. However, Emirates' insurance for travelers stipulates that if one of the passengers is diagnosed with COVID-19 during their journey, the Dubai-based airline will cover their medical expenses up to €150,000, and it will pay €100, roughly $165, per day of quarantine costs, such as a hotel room for up to 2 weeks. Despite the quarantine costs in Australia actually costing $2,500 for the roughly 2 weeks, coming out to about $178 per day. And if the worst does happen, Emirates will offer €1,500 for a passenger's funeral, a reassuring message for potential flyers. We might not be able to stop infections, but we will hush your family with blood money. Emirates, fly with us. The insurance is automatic with ticketing, effective immediately, and carries no fees for travellers. This is the funeral equivalent of shrinking my leg room. You tell me it will benefit me by lowering ticket prices, but I spend the entire flight mounting the middle seat in the row because they are a heavy sleeper and it's less awkward to just climb over them than to inform them that not only do you need to go to the bathroom, but then they can't go back to sleep for an undetermined amount of time because I will be back from my toilet side quest. Besides, in Australia, the average cost of a funeral, $4,000. So this is just the natural conclusion of the airline not providing what it promises, even in death. Speaking of relatively empty corporate gestures, Unilever, creator of Your First Deodorant and mega company that owns a surprisingly large number of things, including ice cream owned by your cool uncles who attend Burning Man, Ben and Jerry, have made their gesture of reconciliation with white supremacy and systemic racism by removing the long-standing ice cream tune, Turkey in the Straw. Because Turkey in the Straw was taken over by minstrel shows, infused with racial hatred, and then slipped back into mainstream culture. Basically, they may as well be playing Al Jolson from the speakers. So what they did is they approached the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan to create a hot new summer jam for the ice cream van, which, if I'm honest, is actually pretty good. Let's listen. Now here's the thing, the company does have a troubled history with using animal testing, being involved with lobby groups that lobby for free trade at the expense of the environment, animal welfare, human rights and health protection, and using brutal force against striking workers. Hooray! But at least now, when they strike down the workers, they'll hit them with equal hatred, and they won't be hitting one group harder than the other. Hooray! But it is a great song though. Let's just listen to it one more time. Moving on to education news. Education Minister and Budget Dick Tracy villain Dan Tehan is proposing a major change to universities, putting additional pressure on students' lives on top of study, parental pressure, the creeping decline of secure work, a pandemic potentially causing a looming recession, stagnant wages, and having to rent a house with Trent and Bryony, by proposing any student who fails half of their first 8 subjects in a degree would lose access to a government-subsidised place and help loans. Dan Tehan was heard touting the current Liberal Party slogan, "Hey, we already did a socialism this year." The change comes on the back of claims 6% of university students fail all of their first year subjects. 6%! Guys, look at this. 8.5% of people leave their jobs in the first year, and more people are in jobs than go to uni. So that 8.5% is actually going to be way more significant than the 6%. Should we cut them off from being allowed to work for failing to see their job through? Seems like the logic plays out. Tehan said, "What we don't want is students enrolling in courses and in doing subjects which they're clearly not prepared for or don't have the right attitude to complete and they're failing." But my media studies course instructor told the entire class in our first year, anyone who thinks that they know what they're going to study now will change their mind before the end of the year. It's university. Have you never watched a coming-of-age movie? This is what university is all about. You go, you try out a few new personalities, a few new haircuts, some clothing styles. You try a course, maybe it sucks, maybe you change it. You know, you're changing it, and it's past registration day anyway, so the classes, maybe you slack off a little bit, maybe the work gets left behind while you look for something that's more fitting, something that fits you better. Maybe you go have a few drinks, or Maybe you try to hook up with a cutie in class because, hey, you're leaving anyway, so you suspect it won't matter when it fails. Just like your classes. And that doesn't even account for the people who have genuine problems like financial issues, career needs, travel problems, terrible teachers, or just health issues. Under the proposal, a student who fails half of their 8 first subjects in a degree would lose access to government subsidised place and help loans. This is the latest proposal from a man who brought you the "you protest, you pay" idea, which failed to go through. So yeah, there's only 3 more failures before he is kicked out of government payments. Yeah, that's right. Goes both ways, Tihan. On this new proposal, Tihan said, "The last thing we want is students doing a course, not getting a qualification, but then being left with debt and having to pay off that course. An easy way to solve that problem would be to make education free, like it used to be." But don't forget, the Liberals' new slogan, hey, we already did a socialism. There is a lot of kickback to the proposal, so I doubt it'll get passed. That would become his second failure. Careful, mister, or we will cut you off from government payments. Tying HEX to the passing grade of first-year students is one of the most foolhardy ideas I have ever heard. And Dan should know, he has 3 degrees. It feels more than anything like a punishment for the crime of still being young and daring to think that you have your whole life ahead of you. I know what my debt looks like, and I will be paying it off probably for the rest of my life. It is a rite of passage at this point. It is the bonding sinew that unites the younger generations. Gen Z may hate millennials to a certain degree, but once they start to get the university debt, then they're going to understand and we're all going to be on the same team. It's the one thing that unifies all the students on campus, is that we are all carrying this debt, and that we will for a long time. It's my choice. And punishing students isn't the way to make them learn. You give them time. A lot of them learn to be better students only when they do the maths on the debt that they are racking up. That is a scary reality that pulls a lot of people into place. And a lot of them only become better students when they learn, and they can only learn by making mistakes. Just because your government fucks their parents doesn't make you their dad, Dan. Stop trying to be their dad. Besides, if I want to waste thousands of dollars that I have to pay back sooner than I thought when you inevitably reduce the payback limit to only $10,000 because the only jobs left are casual jobs, then that's what I'm going to do. Failing classes is a tried and true university experience, alongside throwing up in the uni bar, having a public breakup, probably at a party, and buying drugs behind the library from a white dude with dreadlocks. War news now. War? What is it good for? Attacking whistleblowers, apparently, as the Australian coalition government has spent $3 million attacking whistleblowers. Former Nick Xenophon team centrist political submarine and newly independent senator Rex Patrick said the taxpayer-funded pursuit of whistleblowers showed the coalition was waging a war designed to destroy their lives through the courts. Which is a bold declaration, as Australia tends to not start their own wars. We just follow America into whatever country we are liberating this week. Assuming, that is, that you count bombing weddings as liberation, which I guess some sort of Middle Eastern Roddy Dangerfield definitely would.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I got a wife and kids. Who would ever remind me? They're probably wondering where I went. I told them I'm going for coffee. That was a week ago.
Patrick has said it totally undermines confidence in Australia's whistleblower laws and policies. Whistleblowers should be treated as heroes, not as criminals. Which is right on brand for Team Australia. As Team Australia is all about raising up the underdog and making criminals heroes. So this is bizarrely on brand for getting quiet Australians on board with supporting these whistleblowers, which just goes to highlight the continued incompetence of the coalition government, as they can't even scare the Australian citizens correctly. I would have thought by now that they would have learned what it is that Australians hate, as we are constantly shouting it at them. But that would involve them listening to their constituents, and when it comes to being in the coalition, if you aren't a mining company or a tax-dodging multinational, they are not interested in hearing your wants and needs. Rex Patrick also called for the creation of a whistleblower authority and a reward scheme for whistleblowers, similar to one used in the US. We do use the US as our model for where we go to war, so at least this copying will result in some possible positive impacts. After all, America has never aggressively attempted to pursue and punish a famous whistleblower. It is great to finally see some justification for the $270 billion we spent on missiles. If they just said that it was to go to war on whistleblowers, Sky News would have supported them. I mean, at the very least, Sky News After Dark would be all on board. And what a dangerous world it would be. Companies would actually have to be careful when attempting to force a worker back to work in an unsafe environment, lest they be held accountable for negligence, rather than just doing it out in the open and saying that they were fired for not social distancing. Governments wouldn't have to raid the home of news journalists who have received leaked information and then gone on to accurately report it. No. And besides, how would they justify runaway spending on collating some sort of all-knowing and ever-watching department of nothing to see here? We certainly can't have people knowing when their rights are being infringed by government overreach. That'd be dark days for any government. Not just the one who increasingly seeks to benefit itself while taking away what little the poor do get, while simultaneously blaming them for not having higher paying jobs in a market with stagnant wages for over 40 years. And we can't have that now, can we? And on a lighter note, we head over to the medieval desk for wizard news. New Zealand, a country previously mostly known for being Middle Earth in the Lord of the Rings films, and currently enjoying a cultural moment as the country that had done really well knocking out the scourge of COVID-19 until it hadn't anymore, has been in the news recently for non-COVID reasons. Someone at CNN discovered that they have a government-funded wizard. Yes, that's right. This wizard was born in the UK. His name is Ian Brackenbury. He's paid $16,000 a year by the Christchurch Council for wizardry. The New Zealand Art Gallery Directors Association said he had become a living work of art. And the Auckland City Art Gallery document described his work's medium as artist's corporeal substance. Now, if I'm being honest, he's no Tim the Tattooed Man. That guy's corporeal substance is literally the art and will be framed after he dies. He isn't even allowed to gain weight, as he might damage the shape of the art. You have a lot of work ahead of you, Mr. Wizard, if you want to be considered a living art project. Historically, the man now known as the Wizard backpacked around Europe, was a Royal Air Force officer in Canada, taught English literature in the University of Tehran, and after finishing his degree in sociology and psychology, worked as a community arts organizer for the University of Western Australia in Perth, and then as a teaching fellow in sociology at the University of New South Wales in Sydney. So it is probably easy to say that he's tried to find himself on more than one occasion, and probably more than most people have. Generally, a little backpacking in Europe might result in you coming home with a fake accent, three or four stories you tell at every opportunity you get, and then forcing them in even a couple of times when it's inopportune. But then this guy, he went a little bit further than most white people with not much else going on. When he lost his university job, he hatched a plan with the Vice Chancellor to give him a new position, University of New South Wales' first official wizard, technically turning the University of New South Wales into the first wizard school. And as such, J.K. Rowling can expect a pretty hefty lawsuit from Australian universities as a means of keeping those universities alive, because they certainly won't be saved by the government in this desperate time of need. After all, these universities keep pumping out lefty liberal snowflakes who complain whenever the government wants to imprison a few refugees for an indefinite period, or misappropriate some government funding in order to buy some electorates. Bunch of crybabies. If only the diggers knew that these lefty liberal snowflakes were trying to preserve the integrity of the country that they had fought for, they would be outraged. The Wizard says, "I've invented a wizard out of nowhere. There were no wizards when I arrived in the world, except in books. A fact, a tiny amount of Googling would have proven wrong, as any pagan would attest to, or any Wiccan, and this wizard had best watch himself, or he'll end up in the lair of hell with real-life black magic practitioner and feature character in the Divine Comedy Michael Scott." But hey, it's all about branding. As such, I will be branding the Bearer of Weird News as the world's first news comedy podcast in real life. All other news comedy podcasts have merely existed in the intangible form of audio waves. And if an audio wave plays in a headphone and nobody is there to listen to it, does it even exist? See, I too can poorly philosophize you out of reality. A strange thing though, The Wizard has a 4-star rating on TripAdvisor. This is better than places like Luna Park, which comes in at 3.5, and Movie World, which sits at a solid 3 stars. Presumably, his reviewers haven't heard his old-fashioned views, such as considering a lot of music to be terrible, being outspoken against having a woman as a wizard, and having spoken out against anti-male sexism, despite being almost entirely supported by his wife. Then again, people on the internet are strange things. Maybe they gave him good reviews because they heard his views. The internet is a complicated place. But now, at age 87, he wants to find a successor, and appears to have one. 39-year-old Ari Freeman, who teaches guitar, and fronts a psychedelic funk band, and claims that music is a form of magic. Which, guys, come on. That really is a worse expansion of the Harry Potter universe than that time J.K. Rowling said magicians make their poop disappear. At least with the poop, there was a level of impossibility with that. And it's not just distilling down to real-world Harry Potter being him and his friends are a band of rudderless hippies who travel the country like the Scooby Gang, but with less taking down of corporate abusers. Okay, we've made it all the way to the end. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate you coming in and giving me a chance. And if this is your first episode, welcome. If it's something you've come back to, thanks for coming back. I appreciate all of you. Hopefully you can share this with a friend if you think someone might get a laugh out of this. Yeah, it's a pretty complicated time at the moment. We could use as many laughs as we can get. Please share it. Please send it to someone who you think might enjoy it. Share it on social media, wherever you want to put it. And hopefully you stay safe out there. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear a mask. Stay inside if you're in lockdown. And be careful if your country refuses to go into lockdown. Look after each other. And I'll see you next time.